Hello, amazing parents and caretakers, and welcome to the Pumped Up Parenting Podcast. I'm your family empowerment coach, Celia Kibler. I'm a mom of a blended family of five kids. I'm a grandma of nine kids, an author, a teacher, a speaker, and a consultant with over 40 years of training and real-life parenting experience. I'm here to offer you practical, doable tips, strategies, and techniques that will pump up your parenting skills and create peace, love, and laughter throughout your family. In addition, I'll be interviewing some great humans that are on a mission to make your life a better, happier, and healthier life. So let's not waste any time and get started with the next episode of the Pumped Up Parenting Podcast. Thanks for listening. Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Pumped Up Parenting Podcast. Well, let me tell you, we've got a powerhouse couple with us today that are redefining the equation for success in math education. Tammy and Mark Goldberg are the underground math education innovators who cracked the code to getting math right, and I wish I knew them when I was growing up. Their journey unfolds at the forefront of the Mathnasium Learning Centers. Have you heard of them? Because they're tremendous. They run worldwide, where they're not just educators, but architects of confidence and logic. Today, not only are Tammy and Mark the masterminds behind the majority of Mathnasium's curriculum, but they also are operators of five Mathnasium learning centers in Manhattan and Brooklyn in the state of New York. Welcome, Mark and Tammy, to the Pumped Up Parenting Podcast.
Thank you so much. It's really great to be here.
Yes, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Love that you're here. Please tell our listeners how they can find you, or I guess find the Mathnasium stores, are they called stores? And tell us a little bit about how you got into, you know, doing this and math and becoming like the geniuses that you are.
Okay, sure. So as Celia said, you can experience our work in the Mathnasium Learning Centers anywhere near you. And then you could just look up on mathnasium.com and you can locate your nearest Mathnasium Learning Center. That's where our curriculum work lies. We own Mathnasium Learning Centers in New York City, one on the Upper East Side, Upper West Side, Union Square, and two in Brooklyn, Brooklyn Heights, and Burham Hill. And also one in Doylestown, Pennsylvania, where we live now.
Yeah. Also, we have an Instagram page that, you know, is just for us, and it's called Getting Math Right. So you'll certainly hear things about Mathnasium, but
go ahead and follow us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Getting Math Right too.
Yes.
Yeah. So head over to Instagram. We love free information, and so many of us struggle with math. And I remember my dad was excellent at math and I never really was. And I probably never was, because I always say I'm not good at math. But he used to say math is like a game. You know, it's like a game, and people get stuck on it because they don't see the fun and the play in math. Like I used to see like terror, like, oh my gosh, I don't get it. And problems, you know, when they give you like, Joe had 25 apples and Sarah had 36 oranges. How many bananas did they have? You know, that whole thing used to like terrify me. When a child goes to the Mathnasium, what about it helps a child learn math, which so many kind of have like a wall up about? How do you like take that wall down?
Well, I think I'll start with that. I want to kind of unpack what you experienced from your father, where there are some people that are wired to see math, feel math more easily than others. And so for those where their minds work in that way, they think efficiently, they see how the pieces fit together, math is fun. It is a game. It is a puzzle. But a lot of the general population doesn't necessarily have that. But that doesn't mean that they can't learn to think in the ways that those people who are more naturally wired, you know, to have that ease with math do. They can. And I think that's at the crux of what makes what, especially at the curriculum level, what we do at Math Needs, because there's more than just that that leads to the success. But at the curriculum level, that we have figured out the ways in which natural mathematical thinkers do math.
Like your dad.
Like your dad. And we make that available and possible for every child to learn to think in those ways. So the more that they develop those ways of thinking, those skills, their whole relationship with math becomes more enjoyable. They're at ease. Everything just happens in a way where it's not scary anymore because they've got these ways of thinking where it feels natural to them now. So I think that goes a long way in changing that narrative for kids that come in where they feel like I'm not good at math. We teach them these really slick, great ways to think. And something that before felt like a deficit to them, now it feels like an advantage.
So they can experience math the way that people like your father can experience it, which is fun. And it's a puzzle. And sometimes when somebody doesn't think in those ways, maybe they have other strengths that could be more right brain strengths.
Mm-hmm.
Hearing that is kind of like deflating, like, oh, well, what's wrong with me that I don't feel that it's so fun? And then you get some outside reinforcement at times from teachers and parents and friends that you're right, you're not good at math, or maybe a parent,
I'm not a math person, right? That
they
whole thing
on that label of I'm not a math person. Well, that's what we undo at Mathnasium.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And I think that's like you hit the nail on the head with like the relationship people have with math, because, you know, it is that people say, I'm not a math person. And, you know, and I feel like a lot of people, you know, are either like math and science people or language arts people. Mm-hmm. And their brain, like you say, is wired for one or the other. Some people wired for both. Like my daughter, she's wired for it all. She doesn't matter what she's working on, she's great at it. Mm. And but I am definitely more like the language arts, creative, which doesn't mean math isn't creative, more of that mind. Mm. And not as much. And it's really, I think, also labeling yourself, that relationship you have with math, and then believing that, you know, part of it is because you label yourself, you don't take an interest in it. You know, yeah. We're always good in stuff that we take an interest in. And if we take an interest and we're like, well, we're not good at this, you know, that connection gets lost.
Yeah, it sure does. So when we have a student walk into a Mathnasium, their first experience is an assessment with us. And it's an assessment that is interactive. And we teach along the way. We empower kids to be able to do a couple fun little mental math, but ways of solving that are like impressive to their parents, where they can walk out and be like, hey, mom, I know what 8% of 300 is.
Right. Puff out their chest a little bit.
Yeah. Or like, yeah. I know what half of 96 is. And they walk out of our assessment experience just feeling like their posture's changed. They're like, oh, there's hope for me.
Yeah, for those kids that come in struggling. Absolutely.
Yeah, because not everyone comes
in. Right, there's plenty of kids that like come in just because they already love math and they want more. And then we teach them a cool way to think and they're like, whoa, oh my God, I want more of this, right? So there's that too.
Yeah, so in that initial interaction, while we're like, we're collecting all the information that we need so that we can put a plan together for this child that is going to like get the results that everybody wants. But the most important thing in that first interaction is how can we make this child really believe in themselves again, mathematically?
Yeah.
And you know that, I think that's the core genius of our program.
Mm-hmm.
For people that really want to fix any problem that's going on in math, if you're willing to put in the time, Mathnasium is the place to go, for sure. And I would definitely handle it in the elementary years before it compounds into Algebra 1 and beyond. Like
yeah.
The 4th through 6th grade years, like that's the time to get the best support possible for a child. And really, you need a comprehensive program that can fill in the gaps that have accumulated along the way. And there are a lot of gaps now, particularly because of the pandemic. And, you know, we
everything associated with that.
A lot of kids are at least a year behind mathematically, and sometimes they're not even getting notified by the schools and by the teachers because, well, for lots of reasons. But one being that everyone's behind, and then it's going to catch up with them in
right.
middle school.
And do you feel like,
That's okay. That's when you'll feel the pain of the gaps is in algebra one, if you don't deal with it before then.
Yeah. And ideally it is dealt with before grades really matter.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Once we start having grades on transcripts and all that, I mean, it doesn't mean that we can't get it in a better place, and you certainly you can. But when you have a longer time horizon of getting to that point of when grades matter, then, you know, everybody is going to be better off for sure.
So what ages, since you brought that up, does Mathnasium serve, or do they serve all ages?
Kindergarten through 12th grade.
Yeah. Some even work with some pre-K kids, but yeah. Generally K through 12, but
okay.
certainly the largest impact that we make generally is in elementary and middle school, as I'm stating, because we're not at a place generally where grades really matter yet. And so it becomes harder for us to go back and fill gaps and all of that when the pressures of tonight's homework and tomorrow's test or SAT scores and, you know, things like that start taking precedence.
And lots of accumulated gaps.
Lots of gaps. Exactly. It becomes harder for us to do what we do really well. Doesn't mean it's not possible. And there are high school kids that can benefit tremendously from Mathnasium. But it's a bit of a different experience because we kind of have to evolve our goals a little bit to align more with, hey, the realities of
the current subject matter,
which, you know, ideally we'd stop time, we'd fill the gaps, and then they'd be ready to handle what's going on right now. But the only time that we can really in some ways stop time is during the summer, right? That's the time when new school learning isn't happening. The unfortunate reality that we've seen since we've been doing this in 2008 is that that's the time that so many parents just check out. And they're like, okay, school's out, we're going to stop academics. And
right.
Especially for students that are struggling, that is the worst thing that a parent can do. It's like, yes, we're like, I get it. School, like, kids are working really hard during the school year. But that's the only time that we can purely make gains and not, you know, be falling into further deficit, like, you know, or we're not, you know, fighting against the grain, so to speak, with new learning.
Right.
So, you know, that's one of those things that I think has driven us nuts about this business is that it's like we know that, hey, that's the worst thing you can possibly do, yet come, you know, May, June. It's like we get so many parents that are like, oh, we're going to take off. And we sit there for the kids that are struggling. Look, the kids that are on grade level or above grade level, like,
please go.
They'll be fine.
Yourself.
Right.
Right. But for the rest of them, we're talking about 2 hours a week.
Yeah,
right. Not like a major commitment.
Yeah.
And I mean, I always encourage parents to do some kind of reading worksheets during the summer. Like every day should include a little bit of something so they don't fall off totally on their education. Do you guys feel like I feel like they speed kids through too fast every year? Like they're learning things. I remember my son Kyle was in fifth grade, and this was back a long time ago. Because he's 35, so I don't know what it was. Because, well, I'm not good at math. No, I'm just kidding.
You could figure it out, I'm sure.
I can. Probably if I had a pen and like a calculator. But he came home from school in fifth grade. His first homework assignment was pi. And I looked at this homework because I was always, you know, engaged with their homework. And I'm like, okay, Lauren, my daughter. Hi, this is Celia, your host and family and relationship empowerment coach and mom and grandma, here to take a break from this podcast to give you a special opportunity. As parents, we all have those moments. The pressure builds up, the noise gets too much, and before we know it, we're raising our voices higher than we ever intended. But what if there was a better way? Introducing 21 Days to Stop Yelling at Your Kids, a revolutionary program designed to help you communicate with your children without yelling. Imagine a home filled with understanding and respect, where your words have impact without the need to raise your voice. Created through my over 40 years of experience, this course offers you practical, easy to implement strategies that work in real life. You'll learn through interactive lessons, engaging exercises, and a supportive community. No judgments, just guidance. Because being a parent doesn't have to mean you're perfect. It's about growing and it's about becoming intentional. In just 21 days, life will be calmer and more harmonious. What if you don't get the course? Where will you be in 21 days? Still feeling like a bad parent? I encourage you to join the millions of parents that I have helped who have found a new path to communication and connection. Visit quityelling.com to enroll in the 21 Days to Stop Yelling course today. And for our podcast listeners, use the code PODCAST for a 60% discount. quityelling.com, because love speaks so much louder than yelling. Thank you for listening, and I look forward to seeing you on the other side. And now back to our podcast. You have to help your brother with his homework from now on, because I'm pretty sure pi is where I ended all my math work.
They lost so you at
either
pi.
Have lost to you talk at pi. To
your grandfather, right? They lost me at pi. You either have to talk to your grandfather or your sister, because I'm done here.
Yeah.
And now I talk to some of the kids that I work with in coaching that are in school, and they're in, like, you know, fifth grade doing algebra. And I'm like, are we rushing them before they even get grasp of the basics?
Yes, definitely.
So that causes its own problem, because they haven't really mastered what they need to master to go on to the next level. I feel
totally.
Like.
Yes.
Well, it's two parts of that. The algebra that they're doing isn't like like the basic pre-algebra, and sometimes
like algebraic concepts, but it may not necessarily be full-on algebra.
Yeah, they probably have a variable here and there. Like, yeah. X plus 3 means 3 more than something. Like, it could just be translating algebraic expressions. So it could be that it's beginner algebra, could be. But the foundation is always weak. It's always weak. Schools should be focusing on how do we really strengthen kids' mathematical foundation before we even get the dessert of touching at pre-algebra.
You know? Yes.
That's a privilege to be able to get to pre-algebra stuff. Like, how about we focus on multiplication and division facts?
Exactly.
Because most kids don't have those in like fifth and sixth grade. And if you don't have multiplication and division facts, you can't do long division. You can't do multiplication.
And then you feel, factor, you know, you reduce. Don't have confidence to keep going.
Yeah,
but part of the problem here is that the curriculum that elementary schools are using to build the foundation is weak.
Very weak.
Kind of across the board. It got much weaker out of the 80s. Like in the 90s, the curriculum got a little strange. and is pretty much called new math or reform math. And it's caused a lot of confusion. And we see it. We've been in business since 2008. And
it was going on then, and it's still going on now.
Yeah. It's slightly correcting, I think, now.
Yeah.
Because the teachers are kind of, they've had it. They're like, this isn't working.
Yeah, it's not the teacher.
Get me some worksheets. Give me some worksheets that teach the standard algorithms. And those are the good teachers who are really looking out for their kids.
Yeah.
When you come to Mathnasium, you're learning the standard algorithms and you're learning good mental math skills combined. Like, we're bridging the gap between the more traditional 70s, 80s style math and what the reform math programs were trying to do, which was build more number sense and explain why do we use
bring
these algorithms, bring transparency, right? But they went off. The wall.
Right. But what they need is they need like the full breadth of skills, and they need to be helped and guided through when does it make sense? What are the circumstances that where you would bring out this tool to use it? That I think part of where school has gone wrong in general is that they are careful to not tell kids directly, hey, when the problem set looks like this, this is a good way to do it. And because it's like, oh, we're supposed to just let them figure it out for themselves. Well, we do have to provide some direction, and we can do it by asking leading questions, right? We can use Socratic questioning to help the child to uncover a great way to think about it. But there are also times where it just say, hey, when you see it like this, do it like this, and here's why.
Right.
And
let's give an example.
So, sure. Give an example. Let's talk about comparing fractions, right? So, if we're comparing two fractions, a great way to look at it is to first compare it to half, right? If one's below half, the other is above half. If we have the ability to do that, right? Of course, we have to have the prerequisite knowledge where we can do that. That's one way immediately where we can just by inspection look at it. Is it greater than half or is it less than half?
So let's say 3/8 compared to
4/8 or
maybe 4/7.
Yeah.
4/7.
Yeah.
Okay.
3/8 and 4/7. Sure. So,
and I think that's how I learned to do it. Like when you look at a fraction, you determine the half.
Right. So you're looking, so compare to half. Well, then another thing you could do would be like, let's say you have more fractions in there too, that you're comparing. Let's say we put in like 1/10. Okay. So being able to also compare to zero, right? So looking at which one can we easily discern is closer to zero, is closer to a half, is below half, is above half. Now, when the numbers get super close together, and we can't use, or also we can think about closer to one too when we're on the other side of a half. When the numbers are too close together, where by inspection, by using that number sense that we have, that we can't clearly know which one is bigger or smaller, that's when we want to make common denominators and compare in that way. So having an organized approach where it's like, first, I'm going to compare to half, zero, and one. I'm ordering like, you know, five fractions. Okay. I'm going to bucket them into less than half, more than half. Okay. Now I'm going to compare to zero. Now I'm going to compare these to one. Any that are left, I'm going to make common denominators. That's an organized approach that we're teaching where kids still have to have good number sense. They have to be able to look at those and be able to determine using their sense of not only the relative size, but then, oh, if I can't determine that, I've got to do something.
Right.
You have to use a procedure. Part of having good number sense is knowing when to pull out that procedure and when you don't need to. You know, another example would be, let's say, adding two-digit numbers, right? Or let's say, you know, doubling 28. Okay, well, we want a student to be able to think, oh, okay, well, I can double 28 because I can double 20 and double 8 and put them together. 40 and 16 is 56. That in that case, I don't have to line up the numbers and add with carrying, right? I don't have to do that in that case if I've got, but let's say I've got, you know, 3 5-digit numbers. Do I want to be taking that same approach of, oh, I'm going to multiply the 10,000, or I'm going to add the 10,000s, and then I'm going to add the thousands, and I'm going to add the hundreds, and I'm going to add the tens, and I'm going to add the ones. Oh no. And now I've got to put all those together at the end.
Right.
No, I'm going to have the sense to, okay, in this case, I'm going to use the algorithm. I'm going to line up these numbers and I'm going to add with carrying, because that's what's going to get me an efficient, it's an efficient way to get the correct answer, you know, very, very, very timely, as opposed to going through that whole, look, if you want to do that stuff where breaking out the numbers like that as a mental math exercise, or to prove a point that this is not a good way of doing it, I'm okay with that.
You're saying that because a lot of the reform math textbooks do that kind of thing.
Yes. Where... it's like skull and crossbones on standard algorithms. And it's like, what are we doing here? We need to teach children when it, we have to help them first when the numbers are small. We have to teach them how to effectively use these tools, use these algorithms. And then as time goes on, we have to help them to understand when it makes the most sense to pull them out and use them.
Can I give you a good example here?
Yes.
Okay. So we're geeking out a little bit on math.
Yeah.
But I mean, hopefully this will be
it's all right. It's a math discussion.
So 9 minus 7, would you believe that a lot of kids get that wrong? What do you think they say when you ask, what's 9 minus 7?
3.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. A lot of 3, because they're counting backwards from 9. That's hard.
Yeah. And yeah. they go 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3.
Yeah.
Because they, yes. And so what we helped kids to understand is that subtraction really means 2 things. In school, they're taught generally early on that it means taking away.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But it also means how far apart the numbers are from each other, the difference. So what we teach is that when those numbers feel close together, we can think about how far it is, like 9 minus 7. We can think about how far it is from 7 up to 9.
9, right.
2. Now, when the numbers feel far apart, like let's say 9 minus 2, it's easier to think, when I take 2, I'll take 2 away from 9, how much is left?
Right.
So we direct them to first recognize when those numbers feel close together or when they feel far apart, and then use that way of thinking based on that set of circumstances. But if we don't ever direct kids, if we don't make them aware of that, then many of them will forever just be counting down by ones.
Right.
Because they have nothing else at their disposal.
And kids go, can I do it that way?
Yeah, like I can do that.
Really? I can do it that way? And we're like, yeah, you can do it that way. Some teacher might make you show your work.
Right.
But then you show your work. That's fine. But you can
there's
check
your work.
It mentally.
99, 100. That would be my work.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
But it's so true. And I think there are all these ways that they teach, and I understand they're trying to make it clear, but they're also not efficient. You know, yes. They're not helping a child be more efficient in working and understanding math, you know, and how numbers work, and giving them options of which way you can go. I mean, because clearly subtracting something, you can either go forward or backwards, you know, mm-hmm. And a lot of kids are very like, my son is very much, if a teacher tells him what to do, he does it. I mean, not, like I say, he's 35. He probably doesn't do that anymore. But
he did,
when he was
right.
in school, he was like, the teacher said to do it this way. I remember him bringing home a subtraction paper in math, and they didn't even learn subtraction. They'd only learned addition. And I think she sent it home. I don't really know why she sent it home, but she sent it home like to see what they knew. And I was trying to explain to him, and he was adamant this was not the way to do it because he had only learned addition. And of course, I let him do it, and he got the whole paper wrong, of course. But I was like, you know, you're almost setting him up for failure. What are you thinking? You know, don't give them see what they know. They're like six. I don't know how old he was at the time.
Well,
it's
one thing. So when we give them something to see what they know, it's in a controlled environment.
That's it. Yeah.
Right? It's under our watchful eye. And when we see them going down the wrong path, we typically just move on. Right. We say, you know what?
Well, in an assessment.
Yeah. In an assessment, I'm talking
not
about.
Not when there are students.
No. But I'm talking about in the assessment where it's purely about, okay, what do you know?
Right.
We may have a moment there where we can, where there could be teachable moments in that. But sometimes it's just, hey, this, we've got great ways to teach you how to do this. I know what I need to know. Let's move on. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's that. But it's in a controlled environment where they're not reinforcing doing something in a bad way, right? In a way that is not serving them well, or in a manner where they get frustrated, because that's the other
right.
thing.
He was devastated that he got that whole paper wrong.
Right.
You know, because he was doing in his mind what the teacher told him to do. You know?
Yeah.
And that was not the environment. So let me ask you, because I'm sure this question comes up in people's minds when they see Mathnasium. What is the difference and the value of going to a Mathnasium or hiring a math tutor?
Great question.
Yeah, really good question.
Do you want to start?
Sure. Well, generally, I think people are, let me just take a step back for a second. I think most often in, you know, that people are more drawn to the private tutor in many cases. And that's because they think, I need the teacher that knows my child's curriculum in school. I need them to get, you know, do well on their homework. I need them to do well on their tests. And so they have this very narrow view of what their child needs. And oftentimes, now again, it depends on grade level and all of that, but oftentimes what they actually need is something that is much more under the surface. And where Mathnasium steps in is that we're getting this holistic view, especially for the child who's struggling. We're getting this holistic view as to why is the child having problems today. And then we're crafting a plan based on what's uncovered in the assessment of the key skills and concepts that they have not mastered that are hindering them, that are getting in their way today, we craft a plan that helps them to get there. Now, at the same time, we do spend some time working on current schoolwork for students. Now, there are some students that might be so far behind that we say, hey, leave that in school, right? Like, or get help from your child's teacher for the homework. And we're going to dedicate all of our time to filling the gaps. But for most kids, there can be a schoolwork component to what they do. So generally, the private tutor, one, doesn't have the diagnostic assessment tools, doesn't have the tremendous curriculum that we have, and is generally working on, you know, kind of triaging. So the child has a homework assignment that they're having trouble with. Well, in the moment, the tutor has to determine, okay, well, why is this child having trouble with this? I'm going to just try to teach them this skill. And then they might find that, oh, but they're having trouble multiplying. So how are they going to be doing this? Uh-oh, okay, well, now we've got to work on multiplication facts. But they didn't actually assess what the child is having difficulty with. Which facts? Is it all of it? Is it certain facts? And if they actually go down that road, they're going to have to kind of spin their wheels to try to get there. Now, that's the scenario of the struggling student that is, you know, that has a lot of, that has gaps, and that's why they're having difficulty today. There could also be the student that doesn't have nearly as many gaps, and that student is having trouble because maybe they're just not connecting with their teacher, and they don't understand the way their teacher is teaching them certain concepts in algebra or geometry or what have you. You know, they're generally a high B or an A student, and they're having some difficulty, but they don't have tons of gaps. That's where I think generally a private tutor can be very helpful. compared to Mathnasium.
It's at the high school level when the foundation is already strong. That's when a private tutor makes tons of sense. I've been a private tutor, and that's where I made the biggest impact. When I was a private tutor for some of the elementary kids, like before I had the Mathnasium curriculum, I didn't know how to really fill the gaps. I didn't really know how to teach number facts in a way that was going to build real fluency other than just flashcards or like computer games. I just didn't know. I was very curious to find out. Didn't realize that I'd eventually be creating a numerical fluency program used by Mathnasium all over the world.
Yeah, we should probably talk about that a
little
bit.
Which is a good
too.
Segue, because that's exactly what I was going to ask you next. So we talked a lot about magnesium. We talked a lot. Have you taken your magnesium today? That's our little plug for magnesium. So we talked about Mathnasium and all the good it is. What happened to make the two of you who own Mathnasiums, you're not the founders, create this curriculum that's now being used, you know, throughout the franchise?
A loaded question.
Okay.
Give me the Reader's Digest condensed version.
Terrible here.
Yeah.
Oh man.
It was definitely
should
not
I say contributed to the curriculum?
Well,
it's nothing in what you said.
No.
Just, the answer is a little.
It's complex, and it is very unconventional in a franchise system for sure. You know, usually you don't have franchisees that are major contributors, you know, to the foundation of the product, so to speak, right? So it was something that, I mean, so when we came into the franchise system, we were blown away with the ideas of the math founder, Larry Martinek, who is just incredible. He's an incredible human, an incredible educator, and somebody who, you know, is like a father figure to us, and someone who we worked very closely with when we eventually did so much of the kind of re-engineering of the curriculum. But he was an integral part in that, in guiding us, in encouraging us, and coaching us. So the problem was that Mathnasium was a franchise that was, it was franchised very quickly. They went from owning one learning center, running one learning center at the franchisor level, to next year franchising. And wow. So, and Larry in the first center, he was the center director, and it was almost like the chess master model where Larry would, you know, there'd be tons of kids in the room and Larry would be able to check in with each of those students and teach those students. And he was a master of this. And so the one of the big problems was that it was very hard to get part-time instructors that are, you know, many of them not very experienced to be able to teach in the way that Larry was teaching. Right. How is
that's
that,
the
right?
biggest
how is
problem
that
with franchise?
Right.
How duplicating the person.
Exactly. How is that possible? And so one of the biggest problems we faced was that then we as franchisees, well, we could learn to teach like that and we could learn that. But there was so much missing in the curriculum itself, where it was mainly, there were a lot of practice problems where, and underlying that, we knew how Larry wanted us to teach that. But it was very hard for us to train instructors to learn to teach in those ways. So that was, so a big part of it was we need curriculum that is written through a different lens. And that lens, it's through the lens of how to help that 10 to 15 hour a week employee become excellent and teach like Larry would.
Without
and teach like
having,
all of us would.
Like do a master's from us in how to teach.
Because that's
math.
Just right. It's not feasible.
Yeah.
The other piece of it is there were errors. There were mapping problems where it's like, okay, the original assessments, what was the intention of assessing this skill, and are we meeting that in the packet that gets generated from that? And in some cases, we weren't. And also looking at from assessment level to assessment level, are we accelerating in a manner that is intentional? And these are all things that we started looking at. The first time that we dove into assessment writing was because I had an experience. So this, I guess this is what got us going. Tammy was actually out of the center at this point. Our son Teddy had just been born recently, and she was home with him. And here I was thrown into running this center. And just for your audience to know, I had no prior experience in education. I have an accounting degree. So I was a math person, so to speak. And I'm a musician, and I spent like the first few years of my adult life, you know, pursuing a career as a rock star. So, you know, here I am running this math learning center at this point. And, you know, but all of my training on that came from Mathnasium, came from Larry, came from you, mm-hmm. right? Of learning.
I have a teaching degree.
Right, Tammy.
FYI.
Yeah, Tammy has a math teacher.
I was a math teacher.
Yes.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm in the center, and it was days over, and I get a call from a parent, and the parent says to me, Mark, I don't know what happened today, but I want to let you know that Sarah came out of the center crying, like sobbing. And she's like, I just wanted to let you know in case you could kind of try to figure out what happened. I said, oh my goodness, I'm so sorry. Let me dig into this and see what I can figure out. So I go to Sarah's binder, and I open where her current curriculum materials are. And I open it up, and I look at her most recently completed pages, and it was multi-digit multiplication. And in the margins of the page, all over the page, was repeated addition. 8 plus 8 is 16. 6 plus 8 is 24. Right? 24 plus 8 is 32. All over the place. And I'm like, oh boy. So...
Well, explain the oh boy.
Well, the oh boy was, I gave this child a page of multi-digit multiplication when clearly she hasn't mastered multiplication facts.
That was on us.
Bad on me. Bad on us as a system. And that's because at the time, on our assessment, again, this is in 2009 at this point, we had one question on the assessment to determine whether or not a child had multiplication fact fluency, which again, to me, is a product of, this was rushed to market, right? That's what that was.
Right, right.
And I had this moment, I was like, oh God, we're going to have to do something about this. And at the time, Mathnasium was a very young franchise. There was only maybe 60 to 70 locations in the country. I mean, now there's, you know, well over 1,000. And so I had been in a private instruction setting. I had been doing a lot of innovative work in teaching kids multiplication facts using number sense together. So we're not just sitting there with flashcards, but teaching them direct ways of thinking, efficient, reliable. And, you know, the thinking was, well, is there a way that we could get every kid to have that opportunity that I don't have the bandwidth to work with every child. So that needs that. So I had reached out to Larry, and I was on a call with him and a few other education-minded franchisees, because believe it or not, there are some non-education-minded franchisees.
I'm sure.
But it's a business, right? Of course.
It's a business.
Right? Yep. Right? And so I was explaining to them what I'm doing in that setting. I told that story, and everybody was like, it sounds like you're doing amazing work. And Larry said to me, look, I'm very much in favor of what you're talking about. We don't have the internal bandwidth to do what you're suggesting. But if you and Tammy want to write some things, we can make it look like Mathnasium, right? And we'll work together, and we can publish this and make this available.
That's awesome.
And that was the beginning.
Love Larry. Like, he was so open to innovation. Like, he wanted to get it right.
Yes.
They didn't all feel that way.
No.
But he had the original passion.
Yes.
You know,
yes,
it's really hard owning.
And the ideas.
Yeah.
And the original ideas that we're looking at. That whole idea of of helping every child to be able to think in these efficient, reliable ways that a natural mathematical thinker does. Yeah, that was you know, Larry's, you know, right. context, right? That really was.
He just needed the right team around him. He didn't quite.
He was fortunate to find you two, and you to find him.
Yeah,
because that's the problem with franchises. Yes. Is people buy them as a business. They don't have the passion that the founder has. You know, I found that when I started FunFit, I went into, like, instead of a franchise program, a licensee program.
Sure. Similar idea, though.
You know, you can train them. They can't be me. Yeah. They can't have the energy that comes from me and the passion that comes from me when I'm playing with a group of kids, you know, and some of them can be, but some of them are buying it because of the profit. Like, what can I make from this franchise? Yeah. Not the love for children that I have, and not the love for children and their ability to love math like Larry has.
Yes, that's exactly.
Right. And for me, being on the ground and experiencing both the you know, the pain that the kids were feeling and the wins, right? And the exhilaration of getting it right, of being able to do this. And then I realized that we had this ability to impact on a level that certainly surpassed anything I would have expected coming into this. I had no intention of becoming this, like, brilliant math curriculum writer. It was by necessity.
Well, and we weren't at first.
And we weren't at first, like, right?
We put in a lot of hours.
Oh, yeah.
We got quite good at it.
But what happened was, once we kind of put in something to solve that problem, well, then we saw another problem. And then we saw another problem. And then we saw another problem. And then we saw this kind of big, massive problem that ultimately the franchisor, after we had proven that we had this ability that they didn't have internally, that they said, okay, let's do this together. And we had this massive project where, you know, we, together with Larry, we redesigned the all of our assessments from grades 1 through 7. And then Tammy and I did the heavy lifting on all of the writing that was correlated to those assessments, which was, you know, well over 2,000 pages of curriculum. It was a 3+ year project. It was painful in a lot of ways. We were also running our learning centers at the time, operating them, right? So we had this business to run, and we were expanding that business too, while also writing this curriculum and having our children. It was a super intense period of time. It was.
And with anything that you're trying to duplicate, you have to have a system. And if you don't have a system, it's not going to duplicate well.
That's exactly right. And we had to be able to, selfishly, we had to be able to walk out the door of our centers and feel confident that kids were going to learn in a way consistent with what was right to us, which was aligned, you know, with our souls.
Because we wanted to expand also. We wanted to have like 5 centers, which we have 6 now. So we needed it. We needed that system to be in place that we could trust. And yes, we have a high degree of, what's the word?
Well, like, we expect excellence.
We expect excellence. There you go. Like, we care a lot. And I think that annoyed the franchisor a little bit, that we cared more than they did at about
not Larry.
Not Larry, no. But maybe the rest of the them people. Who are like, are we still paying them to write all of this stuff? And some saying that we didn't really need it to be done, but we did.
There's that passion, there's that caring. You know, it's like when I work with parents and I work so hard to stop parents from yelling, I have a system that I teach parents. And if they do that system, there's no need to yell anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that system leads to success. Yeah. And your passion and your love to create this system was so that you didn't have other students that, like that little child that went off crying.
That's exactly right.
Because then something's not working and it breaks your heart.
Yeah.
You're trying to do something and it's not working.
And it fed itself so much. Like the more that we did this and the more we were cleaning up and making it better, it was like,
it was that puzzle your dad was talking about.
Yes.
Like it was the math puzzle. It was a big literal math puzzle that we had to figure out. And what was driving it was this deep care for children.
Right.
Yes. And this vision that we saw it, we knew we could get there.
And we had a mentor with us, which felt amazing.
It was
at
awesome.
The time because yeah. we were like early 20s.
Late 20s, early 30s. Yeah.
And like we needed a mentor and we had it. And the synergy was right. Like we
so
all
great.
Had the same mission.
Yeah, and we knew that we were revolutionizing the way that math could be taught. And like we all knew it in the moment. It was like and I think that drove us so much. It was like the more we did, the better we got. And then as soon as we could get that in our centers in front of our students, right? And it was like, you know, and then seeing the results that here's the stuff we did in the laboratory, believing that it was going to make this incredible impact. And then we got it in and it did.
And like it's exciting.
I mean, we had all this material in our centers before everybody else did because we were writing it and we had a means of getting it in there. And I remember we had one instructor who had was from the Boston area that had worked at another mathnasium center. And he came and he ended up working for us for a number of months. And I got a call from that center owner that he had worked for. And she said to me, "I need to come and visit you." And we had a pre-existing relationship with her. And I said, okay, why? She goes, "Well, you know, my instructor, you know, our shared instructor, you know, who's worked for you and worked for me, he was back home during winter break and he was working for me. And he said to me, 'I don't know where they're getting their materials, but they're way better than what you've got.'" Right. So not only were we seeing the results in the kids, right, but getting that feedback from the instructors who
other
knew
people
differently.
Are seeing it.
Yeah. I mean, it was that validation and that motivation to keep going too.
Yeah.
Because there were forces against us to stop.
I'm sure.
I mean, like the bean counters on the franchisor side, they didn't want to pay us anymore to do the work. But literally we said, "Fine, don't pay us. But we're not stopping."
Yeah.
Because we had gone too far and it wasn't about that. It wasn't about the paycheck. It was about getting it right.
Right.
It was about making that difference that we knew we could make. And we knew that if we didn't keep going, that it wouldn't happen.
Yeah. We kept going for like 8 months.
No, longer. Mm. 16.
So good.
Ooh.
16 months.
But it's worth it.
It was, yeah.
Well, and it's making Mathnasium a much more successful place for kids, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, and most importantly, it's making that difference for kids across the globe. And that,
exactly.
I wouldn't necessarily say that was our motivation. Our motivation was more... It was more selfish in that it was about the kids that we could directly impact, right? It was the kids in our direct sphere of influence that we knew that was the only way we could do that to the degree that we did. Later on, we realized that, oh my goodness, we've made this like massive impact.
Right. You made now a global impact.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
And I would feel that more when I'd go to Mathnasium annual franchisee conventions and I'd have some people come up to me that knew some semblance of the story. And because the franchise made it a little hush hush at times because it is an odd situation and I get it. And I feel for them and I feel for the people in their building that, hey, they farmed this out. Now, again, it's not farming it out to somebody that's unaffiliated with the franchise, but still. Right. But I would get people coming up to me. I had one guy, I remember, at the convention, and he said he had originally been an instructor at a center. And he bought into the franchise eventually. And he always had this – he had developed this dream of becoming a center owner. And he said, I want to thank you so much for everything that you've done. I know what this was like before you guys did what you did and what it's doing now. I would not have the business I have if it wasn't for what you did. I'm forever grateful.
How great. And kudos to Larry for recognizing that there are other people, because you're basically a team.
Yes.
On the team that can offer, you know, knowledge and wisdom and a better way.
Yeah.
He was so humble. Because a lot of people refuse to recognize that in other people and refuse to take ideas from other people. Well, Tammy and Mark, this has been enlightening. We could probably go on and on and on. And I'm just, I love the story and the success you're having and the fact that you're impacting so many kids love math that may not love math if it wasn't for your indirect influence over, you know, what they're learning. So I thank you for being here. I ask you, if you would, to offer one more tip that you could give a parent who has a child who's struggling in math, something that they could do to help that child along.
Get a third party assessment. That's not school. It's not you. Obviously, you're too close to it. But go to a learning center who specializes in this, who can really help you get a clear picture of where your child is at right now. Even if you don't go through with the program, if you go to a Mathnasium Learning Center, you're going to get an assessment and you're going to find out like exactly where your child is at.
Yeah, what's getting
in
their way.
And it's important to do right now, because there's a lot of confusion around either like inflating grades or
minimizing the importance of them. Like a lot of times that would be the trigger for parents to get help would be, okay, the child isn't getting great grades, but you know, now, not that I think we should be emphasizing grades in the elementary years, but still there's a lot of de-emphasizing grades or inflating them.
But also the relationship that you have with your child is the most important thing there is. And don't let academics and math get in the way of that.
Yes.
Like, we are here to help you with this. Like, we've dedicated our whole working life to figure out how to serve your child extremely well and build their confidence in both their own abilities and just their general self-confidence. But don't feel like you have to do it all, basically. And, you know, I think
great advice.
Yeah.
Tune into your child, get to know them, figure out, you know, don't just assume that school's taking care of it. Be involved, be a parent, look at their homework, look at their workload, ask questions and get them the help they need, because it may not be this giant bridge between, you know, what's going on right now and success. You may find out you can close that gap a lot. Well, thank you, Tammy and Mark, so much. I really appreciate you being here.
Oh, thank
you.
You
so much for having us.
Well, it's been a pleasure. And to all of you, please check out Tammy and Mark's Instagram page. What is it again?
Getting Math Right.
Getting Math Right. Follow them. They're really working on building it up. Take the free advice. Take the help. Reach out to them on a message, if you need to ask them some questions, and check out your local Mathnasium if you're looking to get your child assessed and possibly work with the success that they've had. It's been a pleasure. I wish all of you parents days filled with peace, love, tons of laughter. Stuff should be funny. Don't take it all so seriously. Get the help you need. Stuff is funny. Math is funny. Not being good at math is also funny. And I'll see you here next time on the Pumped Up Parenting Podcast. Bye-bye, everyone. Thank you for listening to the Pumped Up Parenting Podcast. If this episode was helpful to you, please share it with a friend and leave us a review that will help others. Wonder why kids don't come with a manual? Well, wonder no more, because I wrote you one, and it's just won a wonderful Mom's Choice Award. Go to celiasbooks.com and buy your copy of Raising Happy Toddlers, as well as my children's books. I appreciate you being part of my mission to help 10 million parents stop yelling at their kids. Please be intentional and hug on those kids of yours. See you at the next episode.